This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shaurya Kutin, with me Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. Now, despite Beijing's tough talk, trade tensions with the US could be a tipping point for its economy, especially as 20% of China's exports go to the US. Now, according to the IMF, a trade war with the US will result in China's GDP growth dropping some 0.5% and could drop further as things heat up. On the line, we have Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank in Singapore. Good morning, Vishnu. Thank you so much for joining us. What do you make of this assessment by the IMF, especially in terms of the impact on China?
Well, I think the IMF is taking a very cautious stance. And they're probably still looking at China being very much more trade-dependent with the U.S., then perhaps the reality would lead us to believe. I think the final impact could be fairly large if that leads to much more decreased demand from Europe as well due to all the knock-on effects of trade wars. But the reality is China's dependence on U.S. as an exports destination is far diminished. That's the first part. The second part being China has also moved up the value chain and is a lot more plugged into the region. So actually, a trade war would hurt, arguably hurt countries like Korea, Japan, and Taiwan as much or more than they would hurt China. And China also has got the domestic consumption buffer and also the investment buffer as they are ramping up infrastructure projects, so on and so forth. So it looks like China's buffer is a bit larger. But this is not to say that they want to court a trade war either, because the drag from the manufacturing sector would be very unwelcome when they're trying to restructure the country.
Well, you just mentioned those countries in Northeast Asia. What about Southeast Asia, where we are? What kind of spillover effects could there be for economies like Malaysia's?
Well, I think the spillover effects would be rather nuanced, and it really depends on the details of the kind of trade tariffs that the U.S. puts up against China and the tit-for-tat reaction or the retaliatory tariffs that come about. So far, the approach appears to be one of rather targeted, looking at China's high-tech markets, some of the farm sectors for the U.S., so on and so forth. For the ASEAN regions, I think those plugged into the electronic aspects could hurt a lot, not just due to the impact on China, but also the indirect impact on Korea and Japan. Let's not forget that a lot of the Korean, Japanese, and Taiwanese companies are invested in countries like Malaysia, Vietnam, Singapore. So a lot of the Northeast Asian manufacturers, as much as we would like to think of them geographically isolated in Northeast Asia, that's not quite true. They have got a lot of manufacturing facilities, investments, so on and so forth in the ASEAN region. So the spillover effect will be fairly pronounced and it will certainly be felt.
Vishnu, what about the American side of this equation? Do you still see an appetite for a trade war in Washington? I mean, if you take Trump out of the equation, do you think Congress, do you think the rest of American businesses want to see a trade war?
I mean, I like that you framed it that way, because it really depends on how we define Washington. If Washington is about the trade hawks, apart from Trump, the trade hawks, the other trade hawks in the White House, then it looks like they are, at least itching for some kind of change. And if they think that the means to that change is a trade war, they're quite willing to engage in it. But I think the wider Congress is not quite in favor. And certainly American businesses who are just as invested in Asia are also very wary of the effects. I mean, they would like to complain about certain pockets, but we can see across the board that they have got a lot of manufacturing facilities in Asia. Some do target Asia as markets, and a lot of them derive very cost-effective components for their manufacturing from Asia. So they would be impacted from the cost end of things. And finally, it's the consumer that loses out, and the U.S. consumer that loses out, and businesses may not do very much better. So the total cost would far outweigh the spots of benefit that the American economy could derive. And if it's just to make a statement, we're not sure that the cost is worth that statement. I mean, surely there are better ways to make that statement.
Vishnu, if we could come back to China, I'm quite interested in what you mentioned about China's buffer is bigger. We've heard warnings about China's debt to GDP, which has ballooned to more than 300% in the past decade. It was just 160%. Chinese officials now warning of a financial sector debt bubble that could burst. What do you make of this? Can the Chinese government continue to reduce the risks from bad debt?
I think that's really their dilemma, and I think you hit the nail on the head. So the point about it is, if I just, you know, just take a step back from the IMF report and look at the BIS report, the Bank of International Settlements, they look at the debt buildup on a cyclical basis. So they put in some of the trends for growth, so on and so forth. And what they found is in the last six quarters or so, China's credit gap, that's to say how much debt has accelerated far outweighing, you know, what the growth in the economy would support, that gap has reduced. That's to say some of the credit risk have diminished at the margin. So China has done a good job of reining in some of the risks without deleveraging in a way that would unsettle growth. So right now, we've also seen at the margin that China has been willing to take some steps, like reducing the triple R selectively. And also, I think they will loosen up the credit conditions a little bit if they deem the trade war risks stepping up. So the question is, in the interim, they could, I think, dampen their efforts on de-risking without an imminent debt meltdown. But certainly, if they're taking a 5 to 10 year view, it does become worrying for them. So the buffer that they have also includes the buffer from having to imminently and brutally deleverage. They don't need to do that. So they just need to reallocate debt or credit to economies or to the parts of the economies that are growing and don't have overcapacity. For example, they'll still be very aggressive about artificial intelligence, electric vehicles. So they can still extend debt. And so these parts of the economy could still grow. Though the consumer buffer that I mentioned would have to be, I think, weighed off against rising household debt, which is becoming a little bit of a concern for Chinese policymakers.
So on that note, will that rising household debt have an effect on consumption? Consumption is expected to be the driver of the Chinese growth story.
Well, we can see there is a lot of appetite for Chinese consumption, whether it's onshore in China or offshore as Chinese tourists. So maybe one solution that's available, or at least one tactical solution that's available, is to try to divert some of that spending onshore without having to dramatically increase the leveraged consumption.
Hey, Vishnu Han here. So earlier you lauded China's good move in trying to reduce its leveraging risk or trying to deleverage, right, its economy. So you call it a smart move. So, you know, given that the PBOC now has a new governor, are you pretty secure in the outlook for how he's going to shape the PBOC?
Yes, I mean, I think he's a very steady pair of hands. Governor Yi Gang has been in the PBOC for a long time, and I think he's been tracking the same risks. And I think he's had the benefit of looking at things in some depth and breadth as well. So he's very well acquainted with the banking sector risks. And he also knows the trade-off that it would involve, involve growth. So that's why he's not taking what someone would have anticipated as a brutal approach. In fact, I think quite tellingly in their latest statement, they left out the word deleveraging, which is to say, I think he's sending the right message that he's not looking to deleverage the economy, because that would necessarily also mean that growth would have to slow down dramatically. So he is able to nuance his communication where he will check the risks and see where credit is headed without having to brutally deleverage. So the key theme for them is, and I think the new governor is also going to be on top of it, is to reduce the risks in the system. And risks are associated with whom credit goes to, rather than just only looking at how much credit there is in the economy, because certainly the risk weights would differ from industry to industry.
You're right, Vishnu. And in keeping with that central bank theme, you've got the ECB set for a rate decision later today. The BOJ is set to follow suit tomorrow. So, you know, and this brings us full circle then. You know, we've got the Fed who've expressed concerns about the threat of tariff or wars or tariff positionings being done between the US and China. Do you think the ECB and the BOJ, will they echo similar concerns with their announcements today and tomorrow?
I think it is quite easy to envision that they would allude in some respect to the undesirability of trade war outcomes. But I don't think they're going to jump the gun and react to it in any way or suggest any imminent policy action to preempt a trade war, because they find it hard to quantify and they're not even sure how things are evolving. But having said that, I think the ECB might have a slight dovish tilt for the reason that we have seen some of the activity indicators slowing at the margin. I mean, overall, they would remain upbeat about growth prospects, but I think at the margin, you've seen some of the momentum slowing. We have had an unseasonably cold start of the year, which probably dampened activity in any case. So I think the ECB will want to look past these effects, and so they will probably be firmly in wait and watch mode rather than ratcheting up their hawkish intentions. So from that point of view, I think there will be enough policy accommodation inferred from what the ECB has to say, but I think they will be watching very closely what Draghi has to say about rising yields as well as the trade war risks, because then we are looking at two avenues of risks that Draghi may want to be watching.
Always a pleasure speaking to you, Vishnu. That was Vishnu Vardhan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank in Singapore. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.